And I'm here to tell you, I am exhausted. Not because of the hats, the many hats I proudly wear. I'm exhausted because the report amplifies the fact that somebody has been hurting our people for far too long. I'm exhausted that close to 3,000 U.S. citizens were left to die after Hurricane Maria ravaged my beautiful island, Puerto Rico. I am tired of our people having to work 10 times harder than, sorry, white folks, to prove ourselves, knowing it will never be enough. The truth must be told. Of the 140 million people who are poor and struggling to make ends meet, over 64% of 38 million are Latinx. I'm tired of living among those who choose to become deaf and blind while the most vulnerable among us are dehumanized continually. Their silence speaks volumes. I'm beyond tired of having hateful myths that portray my undocumented brothers and sisters as criminals and rapists, living free and clear, and living free and clear off of U.S. taxpayers. That is repeated continually as facts. Because of that evil rhetoric, a young woman is living in sanctuary here in Richmond this very moment. Her crime? Seeking asylum in the U.S., fleeing from years of domestic violence, which would have resulted in death at the hands of her abuser. The truth must be told. Undocumented immigrants contributed $5 trillion to the U.S. economy over the past 10 years. It paid $3 billion into Social Security, yet they are barred from receiving assistance under the major public welfare programs. I'm exhausted. I remember riding past Resurrection City on my way to work at the Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C. as a high school senior during the Poor People's March following Dr. Martin Luther King's assassination, almost 50 years ago. I am exhausted from being exhausted. And I have a special message to the Virginia politicians that did not have the courtesy to show up and to listen to our pain. My message is, come November, we will remember. Come November, we will remember. Now, I ask you to repeat after me, basta!
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 Enough!
Enough! Together we must answer the call to demand a moral revival.
So now we want to call forward some of the testifiers who are going to share their stories of what's going on and what we're doing about it so that we can hear these injustices enact. So I want to call Joyce Barnes, Chad Oba, and Abby Arevalo Herrera up for us now.
Hello, my name is Joyce Barnes. I'm a home health care worker from Henrico County. I worked as a home health care worker provider for over 30 years. I started work in Baltimore as a CNA. I moved to Richmond and I worked as a CNA in the Virginia Commonwealth Hospital System. In 2008, I worked as a home care provider. I've been working multiple home care jobs. One woman I worked for is an older woman with disabilities. She had a stroke. I help her get out of the bed in the mornings. I help her with her bathing, her cooking, and her writing. I help her practice her speech, which she has to relearn since her stroke. Without my help, she will be forced to live in a nursing home. However, she wants to live at home. She likes being independent and loves being able to see her family in the community. And I love to help her. I always love helping people. I'm a people person. That's just how I am. Perhaps I followed my mom's lead. She was a nurse. But after 30 years of working in healthcare, I'm not being paid anywhere near what I'm worth. Home care workers like me don't make a living wage. Financially, it's hard, very hard. I miss vacations with my kids and my grandkids. Nana, they say, why can't you come with us? Don't you see? We'll see you. I tell them, I have to work. If I miss a day from work, I don't get paid. I don't have any sick days. I don't have any vacation days. Not one single. I don't get health insurance. Finally, I got health insurance. I couldn't afford the deductibles. We don't get health insurance. It's hard. I've been working for years as a professional, and I don't earn a living wage. It hurts. It hurts so much. I'm going to be honest. I'm really struggling now. I got sick last month. I got an infection from a client I was taking care of. Even though I was using gloves and protecting measures, I got sick. I ended up in the hospital for 12 days. I had never been sick or in so much pain. I almost had to have surgery. That was really scary. I'm home now and feeling better. But I'm trying to figure out how to pay these bills. I owe the hospital thousands of dollars. The bill from the CAT scan came alone, $2,000. I'm really upset. I am very worried every single day how I'm going to pay this bill. My credit isn't so great, and this isn't going to help any. To make matters worse, I didn't get paid when I was sick because I didn't have any sick days. It's not right. The politicians and the candidates are here tonight. I don't know what to say. It's just about me. And there are millions of people who are working just as hard as me and who are struggling. I feel like we are the forgotten ones. Member of Congress miss good money and vacations with their family. We just want the same, but we can't. We need raises. We need paid time off. We need sick days and vacation time. We need to be recognized our value. Yeah. Okay. And I feel like it's my fault, but It's not our fault. It isn't right. It isn't fair. We deserve better.
So we have a lot of really important stories to hear. I think we're enough together if people want to sit down and surround our speakers by their body sitting, and then we'll 30 minutes is a long time to stand. So if folks want to sit, we should sit, and we welcome our next speaker.
Oh, wow. I don't know how I ended up here, but here I am. And I'm really humbled and honored to be with you all tonight. The summer of 2014, I woke up, and it was a beautiful day. But suddenly, it began the next 4 years of my life of an education, really, about ecological devastation and the people who suffer that. Dominion Energy's Atlantic Coast Pipeline has targeted my community as the site of the only compressor station in Virginia for a 600-mile, 42-inch fracked gas pipeline because we're rural, of lower modest incomes, and because their expectation was that we would not be able to fight back. They were wrong. At 54,000 plus horsepower, this compressor station, a giant one, even by industry standards, would bring loud, constant noise and release toxic poisons into our air and water. The health of children and the elderly is particularly vulnerable to the many toxic emissions that this compressor station would regularly release. A total of an average of 220,000 tons of annual emissions for every hour of the day for the rest of our lives. The compressor station risks an explosion hazard completely beyond the capacity of distant volunteer firefighters and would be built on 68 acres of a former slave plantation atop the unmarked graves of Union Hill ancestors. Land that was purchased from the descendants of former plantation owners for $2.5 million. The modest homes that cluster around this piece of property, and in some cases owned by the freedmen descendants who worked that very plantation, would be worth practically nothing, while the former plantation descendants made a huge profit. This is wrong. The majority of my Union Hill neighbors and are African American.
My family.
But our county is also home to the community of Yogaville, who have been our allies from day one, 4 years ago, and to neighbors of all backgrounds and races. We meet regularly in the Union Hill Baptist Church, Pastor Paul Wilson. Our community has forged alliances that are unexpected and powerful, both within the county and in the state of Virginia. Union Hill's population size and freedmen history is well documented.
Yes.
Yet state officials sit passively by as environmental racism and community devastation occurs. We are being sacrificed, and the response of our state government has been to ignore us. A common tactic of energy companies is to establish community liaisons to sow discord, discredit community organizers, and disrupt solidarity. This is using an old and despicable playbook of bribery, misinformation, and racial division to drive wedges into this alliance. But we are standing strong. Our hearts are grateful for the help from those willing to listen to and serve those most directly impacted. We have accepted each other's cultural, economic, racial, and religious differences and went on working. I understand now, as a white person, privileged by my race, what it means to be unheard and erased. I live in this neighborhood. I also understand that differences are powerful tools that we can use to strengthen the whole. Our collective well-being is inseparable from our individual well-being. This is a moral fight. In each moment, we are united for the purpose of protecting our earth, our democracy, and our very lives, as air and water is elemental to our every survival. It is a human right that we must continue to protect for those of us in Union Hill and beyond, because we are Union Hill, but we are all Union Hill.
Reverend Lisette Cross, the pastor of Restoration Fellowship, RVA. I stand here today in solidarity with Abby Arevalo. She will read her testimony in Spanish, and then I will share the English translation.
Gracias a todos. Thank you so much for all. Siempre escribo lo que es importante para mí. No quiero perder la oportunidad de hablar sobre las realidades que estamos viviendo sin olvidar. ¿Qué es justicia? Creo que es fácil ir a buscar la respuesta en un libro o en internet. ¿Quieres luchar por justicia? Busca a las personas que no la tienen. Mira por las personas que en pleno 2018 tenemos un grillete. Mira por nosotros que vivimos en los sótanos de una iglesia como prisioneros para poder sobrevivir. Mira por nosotros que tenemos que luchar contra el sistema de leyes, instituciones y supremacía blanca para poder ser escuchados, para lograr justicia. Hay mucho trabajo por hacer. La migra ataca a personas trabajadoras y a comunidades de bajos recursos y a los cuerpos morenos y negros y a otras agencias de la ley. La excusa somos peligrosos. No se dejen llevar por una narrativa errónea de nosotros. Yo vengo aquí huyendo del peligro que quería acabar con mi vida, que somos familias sobreviviendo y luchando por vivir con temores y dificultades económicas, raciales, lenguaje, salud, transporte, entre otros. Hay muchas oportunidades de hacer justicia. Acérquense a personas impactadas por el sistema migratorio. Mi comunidad te dirá que necesitamos el acceso a transporte, vivienda, medicina. Necesitamos que ya no exista ICE. ¿Qué vas a hacer para hacer realidad eso?
I always write things down that I feel are important. I don't want to miss out on the opportunity to speak about the realities we are living and forget. What is justice? I think it's easy to look for the answer in a book or on the internet. But if you want to fight for justice, look for the people who don't have it. Look for us who walk around with shackles in 2018. Look for us who, just to stay alive, live as prisoners in church basements. Look for us who have to fight systems of laws, institutions, and white supremacy in order to be heard. To achieve justice, there's a lot of work to do. ICE attacks working class people, under-resourced communities, and black and brown bodies the same as other law enforcement agencies. The excuse is, we are dangerous. Don't be fooled by a false narrative about us. I came here running from danger that wanted to end my life. We are families surviving and struggling to make a decent life with many fears and hardships, economic, racial, language, health, transportation, housing, among others. There are many opportunities to do justice. Come close to people impacted by the immigration system. My community will tell you that we need access to transportation, housing, and health care. We need ICE to cease to exist. What can you do to bring that to us? Be part of the sanctuary movement by following my page on social media and donating to my campaign so that I may become free. My team has the information on postcards for you. Hands off Abby. We are powerful and we will continue to fight for our communities.
That's right. Somebody say it with me. Somebody's hurting our people. And it's gone on far too long. Far too long. Say the only ICE we need is inclusion, community, and equality.
So we want to introduce the next three testifiers to come join us, Princess Blanding, Phil Willeto, and Reverend Linda Higgins.
Good evening.
Good evening.
My name is Princess Blanding, sister of Marcus David Peters, a black school teacher, VCU alumni, son, uncle, mentor, community member, who was shot and killed on May 14th by a Richmond police officer, Michael Niyataki. Marcus was unarmed, completely undressed, and experiencing a mental health crisis. On August 31st, Richmond Commonwealth Attorney Michael Heron announced that no charges would be pressed against Officer Niyataki, declaring the killing of Marcus David Peters a justifiable homicide. From the moment that Officer Niyataki first encountered Marcus with his gun drawn, stating that Marcus was mentally unstable, to the moment that he pulled the trigger, delivering close-range deadly shots when seven officers surrounded Marcus, and Niyataki suggested that more deadly force may be needed, while one officer dragged Marcus's body by his arms, one in which he was shot in, opposed to rendering aid. When the chief of police, Alfred Durham, made the judgmental statement that being naked does not take away a threat, and when asked if he agreed that there is a genuine problem with black and brown people being killed by police officers in our streets, he responded, no. To Mayor LeVar Stoney, continuously dodging the questions and concerns of the family and community members while playing the political game to secure his own political advancement. The chilling similarities that Michael Niyataki, Chief Alfred Durham, Mayor Stoney, and Michael Heron all have in common is that they are all black men that we, the people, entrusted to put in the positions that they're in. Yet they have all failed Marcus David Peters. They have all failed our community. They have all failed to see that they are part of this national problem called systemic racism. While Richmond City Council members sit in silence and refuse to extend their support in implementing solutions to systemic racism, another black baby is being born with a red X on his back. While Chief Durham walks around with his head high and his chest poked out proudly, a police officer is harassing an unarmed black teen with his gun drawn, knowing that when he pulls that trigger, the blue shield will protect him. While Mayor Stoney is politicking and preaching, trust the process, A black father driving home from a long, honest, low-paying job was just pulled over by a Richmond police officer who claimed to smell marijuana coming from his vehicle. With his hands on the steering wheel, he begins to pray and whisper to his children that he loves them, as he understands that this encounter could be his death sentence. As a brown mother sits on the couch with drops of pain dripping from her eyes, with her phone in one hand and Bible in the other, she receives a call from the Commonwealth Attorney with his decision not to indict the officer who shot and killed her unarmed daughter, who was attempting to defend herself during a domestic violence dispute with the, which triggered her to experience her first mental health crisis. As the Richmond NAACP sits in silence, providing zero support in the fight for justice and reformation, black and brown people here in Richmond and nationwide are being killed at an alarming rate. As we all know, that being black and brown in America is a crime. But there is hope, because I know that we the people have a lot of power. And when we the people unite, and when we the people vote, there's nothing that we can't change. I encourage you to join us on October 13th as we march for justice and reformation. Again, we the people have a lot of power.
Somebody's. Suppress the right to vote. Now watch this, very quickly. The same people that suppress the right to vote towards black people are the same people that deny living wages and deny health care and do not regulate companies that create harm for white, black, and brown people. That is why many of the young people that are marching, Black Lives Matter and other, what is unique about it is when you see black and white and brown holding hands together, because they understand the fusion. And I want the media to hear that tonight, so that it's not separated out. We understand every state or commonwealth that has engaged in voter suppression is also a low-wealth state. Every state that is engaged in voter suppression is a high-poverty state. Every state that is engaged in racist voter suppression is a low-insured state. Every state that has engaged in voter suppression is a state that attacks our LGBTQ community and attacks the immigrant community. Every state that has a voter suppression is a high poverty state. There is a direct connection between systemic racism and all of the other isms. Because particularly in the South, Virginia, North Carolina, if you don't suppress the vote, and black and white and brown and Asian and Native people who are poor and low wealth come together, we represent the salvation of the South and the transformation of the South, and therefore the transformation of the nation. That is why we have to have a fusion poor people's campaign. Somebody's hurting my brother. And it's going on And we won't be silent.
Thank you, Reverend Barber. My name is Phil Waleto. I'm editor of the Virginia Defender newspaper. I'm here tonight with my wife and comrade, Anna Edwards. See, everybody knows Anna more than they know me, so. My topic tonight is the issues of militarism and military, and how militarism and military spending affect us here at home. Money is the obvious one. No country spends more on wars than ours. With 5% of the world's people, we are responsible for 1/3 of all military spending. More than the next 7 or 8 countries combined, and that includes both China and Russia. We're told that some 23% of our federal tax dollars go to the Defense Department, but that doesn't include the cost of maintaining the nuclear arsenal, which comes under the Department of Energy, or care for veterans, which comes under the Department of Veterans Affairs, or the massive interest on the national debt, which is largely the result of borrowing money to pay for past wars. It doesn't even include the actual cost of fighting today's wars, which is a separate expenditure. The truth is that half our federal tax dollars are going to pay for wars, past, present, and future. What does this mean for us here at home? It means that among all the major developed countries in the world, and many of the less developed, we do not provide universal health care for our people. Our schools are funded by local property taxes, so poor communities get poor schools. Unemployed workers wind up in prison instead of in public jobs programs. There's never enough money for decent social services, but always enough money for another war. Each year, we're taxed more than $1 trillion for war. That could pay the salaries of 13 million elementary school teachers for a year, or wages for 19 million infrastructure jobs, or 4-year university scholarships for 32 million students, or Head Start slots for 118 million children. Jobs and education, or wars and occupations, what do we really want? Then there are the social effects of the wars on our society. After the police murder of 18-year-old Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, we saw what looked like a military invasion of the black community. Armed personnel carriers, combat-grade uniforms, and weaponry that looked like it came right off the battlefield. That's when many of us learned about the Pentagon program that transfers so-called surplus equipment to local police departments for free. Some years ago, I was talking with a teenager in my neighborhood in Richmond's East End. There were a lot of street shootings at the time, as there are now. And I asked him, what do you do if you think someone is out to get you? You get him first, he said. At that time, President George Bush was telling us that Saddam Hussein was out to get us, and so we had to get him first. These values are being taught at the highest levels. Our society is addicted to violence. It's in our movies, TV shows, all our popular culture, and it's promoted by the Pentagon, which encourages Hollywood war movies as recruitment tools, and even develops its own war video games. The military is in our schools. The teenager who shot up his former high school in Parkland, Florida, learned to shoot in a junior ROTC program at that very school. When the Reverend Martin Luther King called the U.S. government the greatest purveyor of violence in the world, he was talking about our times as much as his own. The U.S. is now openly at war in Libya, Somalia, Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Yemen, and Pakistan. It has military bases in 70 countries on every continent and a military presence of some kind in 150. The wars are not being fought for our defense, and they do not make us safe. They are being fought to protect the ability of U.S. corporations to make unprecedented profits, and they are making us much less safe by creating millions of enemies we never had before. And worst of all, they inflict unimaginable suffering on mainly poor people of color who are totally innocent of any crime against us or anyone else. As we demonize these same people of color, we build on and expand the legacy of white supremacy that enables the building of an empire on the bodies of the oppressed. No matter who is in office, no matter what political party they belong to, we must demand stop the wars at home and abroad. Thank you.
Somebody's
hurting our people.
And it's gone on
far too long.
And we won't be
silent
anymore.
Hello, I'm Linda Higgins. I'm the pastor over at St. John's UCC. And I have the job of putting some theological concepts around what we've been hearing about all the ways that have been spoken about, that we are living in a time when when we have a moral loss in terms of our understandings. Today, sadly, we have faith leaders who not only disagree about how to care for our neighbors, but are fighting the very notion that God's children are equal in God's eyes. They think judgment is not God's, but theirs. They preach that being well off is a right, not a call to stewardship and responsibility. They argue that they can judge, and those they support for office should judge who deserves, who is worthy of help with housing and health care, rather than preaching the call for all to have food, housing, health care, and to be part of the community. They say that poverty is a moral failing for which people should be punished. That is not what Scripture says. Rather, my scripture and all scriptures call for forgiveness of debt, for fresh starts. We have a God, and yes, in my faith, we call a Savior who called for forgiveness of sins, not seeing how many can be incarcerated so a prison industrial complex can make money. Jesus, in all of his healing stories, made a point of restoring the people that were healed to full participation in their community. Today, that means restoring voting rights, which is the basic ability to participate in our country. We live in a time when many people do not trust the institutional church because they hear church leaders trying to defend the undefendable, who have, instead of looking deeply into accusations of misconduct by church leaders, have tried to cover it up to protect their own or those they value rather than protecting the most vulnerable, who have not called for every child to have opportunity, to have food, housing, health care, education. But they've only focused on making sure that women do not have access to the ability to choose when and if they have children. We in the Christian church follow a Savior that was a refugee. In his childhood, he had no approval from Egypt to live there, and so was undocumented. And yet, the church does not come together and speak with one voice to protect those who come to this country accordingly. We truly do live in a time of moral crisis. And though there are some church bodies, like the UUs here, mine, who try to speak out on these issues, most people are hearing at the best a mixed message. And that message leads many to experience the church as hypocrites, because they know that Scripture in all traditions calls for all people to be treated with care and love, to be welcomed, and to have their needs met. That is why I am glad to be part of the Poor People's Campaign, a movement that is calling on faith leaders like myself to raise our voices in moral outreach at the moral hypocrisy, because I know I am not alone.
Somebody is hurting my brother and my sister, and it's gone on far too long. So I'm going to say just a word from here, Liz, if it's all right, in response. I think that's the last person, and then Liz will. So you hear this from all over the country, I mean all over this Commonwealth and people all over the country, and the question becomes, have you heard something that says, I need to be a part, not of another organization, because the Poor People's Campaign is not an organization like you would think. It's an organism. It's a movement. We have enough organizations. But what we need is a movement where people can be in their organizations but can come together around some central things that we're going to do together to change the moral narrative and therefore change the policy direction of this nation. My dear sister talked about this dangerous moral narrative basically says if you're wealthy, you're all right. If you're poor, you're bad. Well, my brother, ill people raise up with moral dissent and moral actions and moral analysis in the time in which we live. It's just our time. Right? And so we're calling on persons to join. So here's the question. From these stories that you've heard, I do want to say, when Dr. King did the campaign, started in the 50s, there was I don't believe any denomination or group. When we launched, since we've launched, over 12 denominational groups and religious organizations have joined with poor people and advocates to say it's time for a moral revival in this country. You should know that. Don't get so mad with the Pat Robertsons that you throw out everybody. Don't use this term about evangelicals or your problem, because I'm an evangelical. I'm a theological, biblicist, Pentecostal, Unitarian, liberal, conservative, evangelical Christian, which means I love everybody, want to spread it liberally. I'm conservative because I want to conserve justice and righteousness. So be careful how we've been tutored. Because actually, there are more, don't ever think there are not many of us. One time in the Bible, the prophet said there's nobody. God said, look, I got 7,000 you don't even know about. Huh? Everybody's not pushing. That's that ugly stuff. It's just our time. Have you heard something tonight that has made your gut growl?
Yes.
Have you heard something tonight that's made you say, I need to be a part of a movement around this country?
Yes.
Are there any people in here post 60 who signed up 50 years ago or 40 years ago? Maybe you're post your 70, but you got one more fight in you. One more. Is there anybody in here that's living off of the sacrifices of other people, and you in that, you know, 40 to whatever group, and you've been waiting for your time to pay up because you've been living off the struggle? And are there any people in here who have never really been in a nonviolent, civil disobedient, constant, sustained movement against poverty and racism and ecological devastation and the war economy and a false moral narrative all mixed up together, but you ready to see what it's like and you feel something down in your soul? Is there anybody in here that says, you know, I can't mess around and die and it not be written that I stood up while I had an opportunity to change things? Huh? Is there anybody in here that says, I don't know if the efforts we do will be the seed to a movement that will break out tomorrow or if it will be the movement itself, but one thing I know, I've got to do something, because to not do anything is to betray my humanity and to betray who I've been called to be. If that is the case, we've got to build deep. And because stuff is happening so fast, we got to do two things together. We don't have time to organize and then mobilize, and we don't have the ability to mobilize without being organized. So we got to figure out how to do both at the same time. Because the forces of regression are working so hard, right? So here are a few things, and I'll turn to Liz, that we want to invite you into this campaign. We got a coordinating committee here. I want you to imagine if in every state or commonwealth we had 25 or 30,000 people deeply trained in the essence and the analysis of this movement, so that whether or not, for instance, these public policy people came to see us, in it, we would have people in their districts everywhere to hold their feet to the fire. Imagine that. Imagine if we would believe what God said in Amos 5, and that is, you don't need everybody, but if you can get a remnant, a strong remnant of people, every progressive thing that we hold dear, from women's rights to labor rights to civil rights, did not happen because the majority stood up, but they happened because a remnant stood up and changed the way the majority was thinking. I want to know, do you all believe there's a remnant in Virginia? Do you all believe there's a core in Virginia? Okay. Number two. Are you willing to sign up tonight and to help us in every way through social media to find that remnant and to get them signed up? All right. Number three, do you think it would be of value to have, and let's say we might call it another name, but to have freedom schools where we could bring in 1,000 or poor people's moral uprising schools, 1,000 people in every state, to train them deeply in this kind of analysis, this kind of action, and this kind of articulation, so that we can not just be a movement for a year, but a movement for as long as it takes to change and transform the nation? Is there anybody here all the way until November, and then after November, that are willing to not register people to vote, but to register people for the movement who will vote, who will vote clearly, not just for individuals, but for an agenda and for a vision? Because if people are only organizing for Trump, if Trump is gone, they think the problem is gone, but Trump is in because the problem is deeper than Trump. That's why we need folk to organize for a movement that will vote, not just this year, but next year, the next year, the next year, the next year, and every year thereafter. How many of you will be a part of canvassing communities and going into the communities that other people don't go into? And not offend poor people and low-wealth people by simply asking them to vote and then never talking to them again. But registering people. Do you know in the South, do you know right now in the South, if you register 30% of the unregistered African Americans, and if they connected with progressive, low-wealth, poor white people and Latinos, do you know right now there are 5 to 6 southern states that could be fundamentally transformed? Now they ain't gonna tell you this on CNN, because they want to keep the red and the blue. They don't want to think the red states and the blue state. There are a lot of states that aren't red or blue, they're just unorganized. And there's not an analysis that calls people to be organized. because people are tired of voting for folk that won't even say their name or their condition. But what if there was a body of folk who understood about registering people for the movement who vote? You could change Virginia, North Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Mississippi, and Texas. And if you change those states, you have fundamentally shifted American politics. How many of you, I'm just thinking now, if let's just say there was a gathering that formed, let's say a poor people's moral congress, bringing people together from all over the country into one central place, say in D.C., to make sure that the issues we talked about here are pushed into the mainstream. Would you, and I don't mean pushed into the mainstream to become mainstream, but pushed into the mainstream to disrupt the mainstream so that the mainstream will be our stream and the things we're concerned about. What if somewhere there was a massive, massive call to action of poor and dispossessed people and their advocates and moral leaders, you know, maybe, I don't know, 220, just something major, big, thousands of people, where we forced the narrative change and we declare to this nation we won't be silent. I wonder if we could do a few things well with the poor, not for the poor, not paternalistically, but prophetically with the poor. Is there anybody in here, after what you've heard tonight, that's willing to at least try? And the reason I say that is because, you know, you can never promise outcomes. You can't even promise you're going to be here tomorrow. But you can try to be here. And you can't promise anybody you're going to win every fight. But you can promise them this. We've never won a fight we didn't fight. And history tells us, when you really look at history, justice has been beat up, but when people have stood up, we've never really lost any fight we chosen to fight, because the first victory is the faith to say, I ain't taking this no more. That's the first victory of revolution and liberation. So, Liz, I want you to take this mic from me, because I'm sitting down here with the folk. But it sounds like we got some people that's ready to join up. Now, hear her very carefully, because Liz has been doing this a while, and she's a heck of a strategist, and she knows the kind of long-term battle we're in. We're not playing. This is serious business. Liz?
All right, so I have not very many more things to say, and I want us to get to the place where we get to hear the already existing visionary demands that this campaign has come up with, because what we have just experienced is a call to action, and because people are willing to tell our stories and come forward and say, this cannot happen anymore. We're going to organize with people that we've never organized with before. And we're going to have a chance to really fight. In the work I come from, we have a saying that is that movements begin with the telling of untold stories. What we heard this evening are stories that should be dominating our airwaves, that should be at the absolute center of every discussion, every conversation over dinner, every policy that gets passed. But right now, it's just beginning. People are coming forward and saying, this is the truth that must be told. A year before Dr. King was assassinated, he says, there comes a time when silence is betrayal. The truth must be told. And we heard the truth about poverty this evening. people working for not enough. We heard the truth of ecological devastation this evening, coming into communities with their compressors, with their pollution, with their degradation of life. We heard the truth of systemic racism this evening, with unjust immigration policies and the brutality of our police against black and brown bodies. We heard the truth about militarism and the war economy. And we heard those figures of the 32 million people that could be going to school. But instead, our priorities are on war. Here at home and abroad. And so I want to ask Sister Yara Allen to share some community and culture and theomusicology with us right now, because when we hear these truths, we have to seal the deal by singing together and by hearing why we're in this work. And so I invite Yara Allen.
Our lives begin to end the day that we become silent about things that matter. And so I'm going to ask us to stand, and if we could tonight lift our collective melodic amen to the truth that we heard tonight about how important it is that we stand and fight, that we give everything we have to give and not be silent anymore. And so we're going to sing this song. Since we've heard this chant over and over, somebody's hurting my brother, and it's gone on far too long. And so I'll sing to you, somebody's hurting my brother, and it's gone on, and your response will be, yes, it's gone on, it's gone on. Somebody's hurting my brother, and it's gone on altogether, and we won't be silent anymore. And I really want you to think about that. Think about it as you sing. And once you make that commitment to not be silent anymore, make the commitment also that you won't go back on that, that you will always face forward. Right? It's a serious commitment. Somebody's hurting my brother, and it's gone on far too long.
Oh, somebody's hurting my brother, and it's gone on. and it's gone on. And we won't be silent anymore. Did you know somebody wants to build that wall, y'all? And it's gone on. Yes, it's gone on. I tell you, it's gone on. Yes, somebody wants to build that wall, y'all. And it's gone on. And we won't be silent anymore. Don't you know somebody's hurting our families and it's gone on. Yes, it's gone on. I tell you, it's gone on. Oh, somebody's hurting our families and it's gone on.
Good evening. My name is Andrea Miller, and I am one of the organizers in Virginia for the Poor People's Campaign. Thank you for coming out tonight. Now, I have the pleasure of working with you on the campaign demands, because if we don't want anything, if we can't articulate what we want, what are we doing? All right, now, the testimonies you've heard tonight not only reflect what is happening in Virginia, but also across the country, because we are a part of this country. We heard from a young woman living in sanctuary here, and we know there is a growing anti-immigrant backlash in the form of xenophobia, Islamophobia, and the scapegoating and assaults on undocumented immigrants. Undocumented immigrants contributed $5 trillion to the U.S. economy over the last 10 years, and they paid $3 billion in Social Security in 2010, but only received $1 billion in benefits. The rest simply stayed in the trust fund. Virginia has immigration detention centers. They're in Farmville, they're in Stanton, and there's going to be a new one in Caroline County. And, oh, great, now we have four. Immigrant children as young as 14 housed at the Shenandoah Valley Juvenile Center in Stanton say they were beaten while handcuffed and locked up for long periods of time in solitary confinement, left nude and shivering in concrete cells. These millions of hardworking people are, they strengthen our economy and community, and they must be treated with dignity and respect due to all human beings. Immigrants of all backgrounds have the right to citizenship that will afford them a full right to vote and participate in our democracy. We demand a just immigration system that strengthens our democracy through the broad participation of everyone in this country. This includes providing a timely citizenship process that guarantees the right to vote. It also requires protecting immigrants' abilities to organize for their rights in the workplace and their communities without fear of retribution, detention, and deportation. We challenge the idea that our economy rewards hardworking individuals, and therefore, if only the millions of people in poverty acted better, worked harder, complained less, and prayed more, they would be lifted up out of their miserable conditions. 1.4 million workers in Virginia earn less than $15 an hour, and more than 6,000 are homeless. 814,000 are uninsured, and 43% or 3.5 million residents are low income. We demand, number one, immediate implementation of federal and state living wage laws that are commensurate for the 21st century, not the early 20th. Guaranteed annual income, full employment, and the right for all workers to form and join unions. An end to anti-union and anti-workers' rights laws in the state. Bye-bye, right to work for less. Wouldn't be me if I didn't add equal pay for equal work for everybody, including women. Fully funded public resources and access to mental health professionals and addiction and recovery programs. Equal treatment and accessible housing, health care, public transportation, adequate income and services for people with disabilities. Public infrastructure projects and sustainable community-based and controlled economic initiatives that target poor, urban, and rural communities. Let's not forget our brothers and sisters in rural America. The wealthy and corporations pay their fair share. And that fair share goes to provide decent and affordable housing, free public education, a robust societal safety net, and social security. And we can't leave this one out. Repeal the 2017 tax scam. Poor communities, especially poor communities of color, are being locked up, sent away, and killed by law enforcement. Equal protection under the law is non-negotiable. And we have the right to move freely without fear of intimidation, detention, deportation, or death by public institutions charged with our safety. We demand end mass incarceration and continuing inequalities for black, brown, and poor white people in our communities from the criminal justice system. An end to the school-to-prison pipeline and the criminalization of black and brown children. Accountability for police killings of black and brown people. There has been a boom in infrastructure to support fossil fuel production and transportation. Fracking has made the U.S. the world's largest producer of both oil and gas. It has also demanded an expanded pipeline infrastructure crisscrossing the country. Two pipelines and a compressor stations threaten to poison the air, rivers, and streams in rural Virginia. There are 12 coal ash ponds and 8 active coal ash landfills in Virginia. 8 additional, you thought you had problems in North Carolina. 8 additional large coal ash ponds in Virginia are no longer being used for ash disposal, but sit idle, full of toxic sludge on Virginia waterways. We demand 100% clean, safe, renewable energy and a public jobs program to transition to a green economy that will put millions of people in sustainable living wage jobs. A ban on fracking, mountaintop removal, coal ash ponds, and offshore drilling. We demand a ban on all pipelines, refineries, compressor stations, coal, oil, and gas export terminals. My brother Phil talked about military and war economy. Military spending in 2017 was $668 billion. Out of the federal discretionary spending, only $190 billion was for anti-poverty programs. Under the current administration's proposed budget by 2023, 66 cents of every dollar of federal discretionary spending would go to the military and only 12 cents to anti-poverty programs. City police departments are getting military weapons and equipment, escalating criminalization of violence against poor communities. More complaints of abuse have been filed against Immigration and Customs Enforcement than any other Department of Homeland Security agency. Can we say goodbye to ICE? Yes. The truth is that instead of waging a war on poverty, we've been waging a war on the poor at home and abroad. For the financial benefit of a few, it is morally indefensible to profit from perpetual war. We have the right to protect our communities from the ravages and weapons of war and our final demands. An end to military aggression and warmongering. Stop privatization of the military budget and any increase in military spending. We demand a reallocation of resources from the military budget to education, healthcare, jobs, green infrastructure, strengthening Veterans Administration that must remain public, not private. The demilitarization of our communities, an immigration system that instead of criminalizing people for trying to raise their families, prioritizes family reunification, keeps families together, and allows us all to build thriving communities in the country we call home. And that's just a short list.
We've all experienced injustice and many times just wring our hands and think we can't do anything about it as individuals. I hope this meeting tonight has shown you that this campaign can really empower us. We can come together and make a difference. And I thank the campaign for charging me up and getting me off the sidelines. And my name's Steve Hansen. I'm from Chesapeake. I'm part of the Virginia Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. Virginia's organized statewide and into my committee, coordinating committees with members in Hampton Roads, Central Virginia, Northern Virginia, and Southeastern Virginia. Like we've mentioned several times already today, voter suppression is really a big problem that causes other problems. And so in Virginia, we're really right now focusing in on empowering low-income people with the right to vote, to getting out the vote, We are training people to register voters. We're going into communities, canvassing poor communities, going where low-income people live and work, in food pantries, in churches, in shelters. I think I'm particularly pleased with the work we've been doing in voter restoration rights for people who have been incarcerated and have been totally pushed out of the voting scene, but we've been able to move them back into it. In addition to getting out the vote out in the streets, we are also manning phone banks where we're calling unregistered and inactive voters and providing them with instructions on how to get registered. We're knocking on doors and, like I said, going out to meeting the people where they're at. On October 16th, we'll transition from voter registration to get out the vote actions, where we begin the process of reaching out to the underrepresented voters, making sure they have proper voter IDs so they won't be denied voting, giving them the knowledge of where they vote at and providing them information on how to get to the voting places if they need transportation. And then after November 6th, we draw our attention to the General Assembly and also to our national leaders and looked at our demands. Are considered, and the actions in the legislatures are examined under the microscope of the moral narrative we're proposing, so we can shape this country into a more moral and perfect union. You can follow our progress. I hope the website was up on the board, is just up there, and we urge everyone to join the campaign. You can register through that voting website. We also urge everyone to make sure your voter registration is still active. And for those who text, if you text my vote to 804-375-4421, you get a link to the Board of Elections website. You can check your registration and register if you need to. If you've forgotten that information, again, just go to our website and there's links to that. We have created a simple web link to the Board of Elections. Just go to bit.ly/VAREG18. It's on there. And so, again, registration, enablement of the poor people, and then analysis of legislative actions in the light of the new moral narrative we're creating is what we're all about. And we hope that you will realize what power we have together after being with us tonight. And I'd ask you to join us. We'll help you find a way to contribute to the campaign. So let us go forward together, not one step back. Thank you.
And normally, Liz and I stay together, but I got cold up there. And she tells me I can't say I'm old, but I'm just older than I was 20 years ago. My bones got to hurting. But, you know, I thought about it, and that sister shared with me her coat. That's what we have to do. That's what this movement is about. It is about saying, if it takes for you to stay in this movement, I will share what is necessary for you to stay on the front lines until we win. Again, all of you here and all of you on live stream, as you heard my dear brother say, we're canvassing now. I do want to reemphasize, though, we are registering people for the movement who will vote. not just registering people to vote. Because if you vote without an analysis, or you vote without demands in this season, if you don't vote in a way that will push, you know, Democrats to do more and Republicans to do less than the meanest they want to do. So everybody we register to vote, we want them in the movement. We want to build community. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
All right. Secondly, we must be real careful about how we define poor people, because our movement has said poor people are not those 39 million people that they say are below the federal poverty line. There are 140 million poor people. That means there are people who don't look like our image of poverty, but they're poor. They're a paycheck away. They have something, they have a front, but underneath that. And we need to be inviting, because this society has taught them to act like they're not connected. Right? So as you move into all the communities. Thirdly, this isn't playing, y'all. We're going to have to fight. And I mean fight nonviolently, but we're going to have to fight. We won't win these things by just going to a hearing asking for them. Not one thing that we hold true today was won like that. Social Security, labor rights, abolition of slavery. It wasn't won like that. It was won at times when people were even willing to put their bodies on the line. And they were willing to scream and to holler and to vote and to demand. Even when they were told to shut up. Dr. King was told in Birmingham Bill, why don't you just be quiet and just wait? And they said, he said, we are the longest waiters in history. Comes a time you no longer wait. You demand what is right. Nonviolently, and nonviolent movements that demand work. One of our leaders told us one day, said, poor people and impacted people only have two options: nonviolent agitation, massive voter registration and participation, or guns. And we don't choose the guns, because even in history, that's violent revolutions fail. Because the empire uses the violence against those. You see what I'm saying? So this is going to cost. I'm just being real. When we talk about organizing 35,000 people, 25,000 people in a state, it may take 10, 15,000 of them all being in jail at one time to force a change in the narrative. But tonight, all of us have said we won't be silent anymore. Check yourself. If you really want to be in this remnant, make sure that you have to do it. This is not a plague thing. That if you don't do this, people will die. And people may still die, but we're not going to let them die in silence. Somebody said every crucifixion needs a witness. We're not going to allow this to happen to people anymore. So we got to be prepared to fight. We also need Virginia and all these other states, because you have to build this. We believe in state up. It's not helicopter leadership. Liz and I come here out of love. We come here to hear, to help us keep moving and sharing it around the country. But we know that we need more of these hearings, just like this, across the state to help build. There are a lot of people that just don't know how bad it is. If they knew, they would get up and be active. There must be prophetic imagination before there is prophetic transformation. There must be an awakening of the consciousness before there will be concrete actions of change. You are called to awaken the consciousness. And also, we know that because so much happens in our state capitals, if this state has photo ID laws, that you all are still fighting, right, in court. Are y'all still fighting, or did you lose? What? You fought? Have all the lawsuits over your... We fought them, and you won. Okay, and you won some of it. You didn't. Well, we got to still keep fighting, because ultimately we can't ever agree with photo ID, because photo ID didn't become an issue until black and brown people started voting real heavy, right? And plus, it's a form of poll tax. But here's my point. We have to recognize. We have to fight hard in this work, and we have to do it not just until November, but beyond, right? We have to do it beyond.
All the things we mentioned here and happen, every movement has to have a clear target. If you have racist voter suppression laws in this state, it happened in your state capital. If this state denied Medicaid expansion in any way, it happened in your state capital. If your state has bad stand your ground laws, the state capital. If it has bad environmental laws and deregulation of company, it happened in the state capital. If they've had attacks on the immigrant community, it's happened in the state capital. There's been attacks on the LGBT communities, LGBTQ community. It's happening in the state capital. If your education is not funded as it should be, state capital. If your school systems are resegregated, it's because of the empowerment of the state capital and state legislature and the government. If that's the target, it means that one thing this state, this Commonwealth has to do. When those we went to the legislature, some of them weren't there, people got arrested. When they are back, you must build a massive poor people's campaign, national call, moral revival, Virginia style, at your state capitol when they are in session. One of the largest rallies, you must be there. Because you are in a state where somebody won an election by the flip of a coin. Now, there's two ways to look at that. That's crazy. But the other way to look at that is if it was by the flip of a coin, if we flip the number of people who are not registered and not voting and they start voting, we can change the election because they're just that close. The last thing I want to say to you is in this movement, and Liz and I talk about this sometimes, we must not see ourselves as the grasshoppers and everybody else are the giants. Stop telling yourself that in 2016, Trump won, an extremist won. They didn't win. You cannot lose the popular vote by 3 million and win. It was the racialized, antiquated, racist Electoral College. It was 97 million people staying home because the politicians aren't touching their moral minds and imaginations and aren't calling the names of the real conditions. It was 250,000 people being suppressed in Wisconsin, for instance, and Trump wins by 28,000 votes. It was in Michigan, 10,000 votes and hundreds of thousands of poor and impacted people. Nobody even reached out to them or talked to them or organized them. It was because of $10 billion of pornographic sums of money that we know about. But if anybody has got to do all of that cheating to win, it does not say something about your weakness. It says something about your strength. If we can believe, as Liz constantly says, every time I've heard her speak, she keeps saying, I think sometimes I miss it, Liz. They don't really hear you by osmosis somehow projects Dr. King. If they become an unsettling force, not just unsettling, but an unsettling force, and organize and mobilize, and commit to a long-term movement, not just an organization, and believe that what we stand for is the right thing, and this is the right time. That force, the force of love, the force of truth, the force of justice, can in fact transform. We're not losing. What you see happening in America really is what in South Africa they once said was, a dying horse always kicks the hardest. We're seeing the grasp of life of extremism, the attempt to stop the third reconstruction in America, that really a future that can't be stopped, it can just be delayed. And we have to be the ones to say no to the delay. The time is right now. I cannot tell you much as we close.
And I thank you all for allowing me to talk, because I really didn't feel like talking today. I've been some stuff went through the last couple of days, and I guess sometimes my strength comes as I'm talking, because I've really been hurt over the last couple of days. Some things have happened to my mother and all of the floods and whatnot. But I want to say this to you, lastly. It's a call to action. When we started the Tomorrow Monday campaign in North Carolina, they told us we couldn't win. Supermajority legislature. They spent $6 million of our money against us on voter suppression. Governor's office, all that stuff. And we didn't win everything. 17 people went into legislature when they were in session. It wasn't that they arrested me. It was when that day they arrested a woman with cerebral palsy in a wheelchair. That was the front page story. And then the next Monday. And for 3 years, every Monday. Not 1,000 people every Monday, sometimes 100, sometimes 50, but the consistency of it, the constancy of it, the moral clarity, the clarity. And then when we started fighting, we didn't have any lawyers. I didn't tell the folk the first Monday, I don't know how we're going to get out of jail. But by the end of the summer, we had 120 free lawyers. They had $6 million and a bunch of lawyers. We had pro bono lawyers. And then a wealthy firm said, we keep seeing y'all on TV fighting. How long are y'all going to fight? We said, till somebody helps us. And so that firm said, okay, well, we're willing to put up several $1 million of our lawyers. If y'all are willing to fight, we've been itching for a fight. You don't know who will help you and what's available until you stay out there long enough and keep making the noise. We started with 17 on a Monday. And by the in April, and by the next February, 100,000 people showed up at the state capitol in the middle of winter. It's not an anomaly. People coming together is not new. Black and white people came together in the 1800s. Black, white, Jew, Christian, and Gentile came together in the 60s. It's our time to come together now. And this room can build and build and build until I pray that today, soon and very soon, we hear this. Breaking news from Virginia. The Poor People's Campaign, a national call for a morale revival, has just taken over the state legislature. They have a list of demands. They have a moral budget. Thousands and thousands of people are coming. And they are declaring that they're not turning around. Breaking news, that the Speaker of the House and the Senate pro tem have given them their demand, their meeting, and have decided that they cannot resist this unsettling force of poor, impacted people, religious leaders. I pray that soon and very soon, hopefully in the next year, a sound will be heard from Virginia, and it is not the sound of the beginning of slavery that happened 400 years ago, but it will be the sound of the beginning of the freedom of a new movement in this state. God bless you tonight.
Yara and the Justice Jump Off Band gets ready. We're going to show a video from the 40 days that folks can use in the community to keep on organizing, and then we're going to close out with some music.
Our brothers and sisters are sleeping on the street. For a country this rich to have so many people poor, it's immoral and it's wrong.
Our backs are against the wall, and we got no choice but to push.
Follow that breaking news in Albany, where a large group of protesters have moved into the street.
Washington Avenue between City Hall and Lark Street closed down.
Protesters with the Poor People's Campaign of Indiana.
2 o'clock on the East Coast, 2
2 o'clock in the middle, 2 o'clock on the west coast, a wave, and the historians tell us this never happened before.
Our communities, Muslim communities, who have joined the Poor People's Campaign, you can count on us.
Our democracy is in trouble.
Our democracy is in trouble.
And we come to demand.
And we come to demand.
Second warning.
Because it's crucial that we make ourselves heard. No one is listening. We write letters, we make calls. No one is listening. So we gotta make us find a way to make ourselves heard.
We are the Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival. And we are here. We are poor. We are clergy. And we're here to say to our nation's capital, and to the highest court in this
testing,
land.
Testing, testing.
That everybody has a right to live.
Testing, testing.
Everybody has a right to
Let's
live.
Have a seat for just a second.
Everybody has a right to love.
Just a second.
Everybody has a right to living wages. Everybody has a right to vote.
Everybody.
Everybody.
Go ahead, play the video.
Has a right
what
to thrive.
What's happening in the nation?
To thrive in this society.
Says we have a right to free assembly.
We are demanding that we stop the war on our poor.
There will be a movement that will break through the calm and bring people together to save the heart and the soul of this democracy and this world.
Erica? Now, just before, if there are any organizing things we need to say to folk, Yara nodded her head and said there'd been enough singing for tonight. Alid.
All right, again, thank you all for coming. If you have already filled out your pledge cards, we've got greeters at the door that are picking up your pledge cards. If you haven't filled out your pledge card, don't have a pen, visit our website, poorpeoplescampaign-va.org, and join us. Join us, and let's move Virginia forward. Thank you.
And everyone, there's also baskets out back. If you would be so kind, we would love if you would be willing to donate to the movement here in Virginia. So as you're leaving, there's also baskets out there. Any change can help. We know that it takes all things to make a movement. So please support us in the back.
Excitement in this room. We have to take it out. We have to take it to the streets. We have to move with our feet. We have to walk the walk. Now, that's one of the reasons I love the next song we're going to sing. Even if you don't want to sing, please stand up, because there's this awesome part where we're going to call out a bunch of injustices, and you get to say that they are under my feet, under my feet, under my feet, under my feet. I'm going to let no system walk all over me. Well, I went down to the rich man's house and I